Numbers chapter 27. Three things are going on in this chapter. We have the issue of Zelophehad's daughters. We have Moses. He's going to go to a mountain range called Abiram. And we'll end with Joshua's appointment. Three things, very brief. But as our custom is, I want to remember some things. You know, there's things that you develop along the way as far as information. And some things when you study a book aren't revealed till later. And so you come to that and you that's why they did that back then. And that's what happens here. In the previous chapter, chapter 26, the Lord commanded Moses and Eleazar, the son of Aaron, to conduct a second, remember that? A second census of the nation of Israel, like to the first one that was taken about 38 years earlier. And in the second census, we find out what the census is all about. Really there, we find out what the census was for. It really wasn't said so clearly in the first. What was the purpose for that census? For the 12 tribes that were camped afar off around the tabernacle, the purpose for the census was to determine how to equitably distribute the land among the tribes. That's why the census is taken. The first census was taken with the prospect of going into the land, right? Remember that? But they rebelled, and that didn't take place. They've been wandering for 40 years as a result. Now they're at the brink of coming into the promised land. Another census has to be taken because all of the warriors that were numbered before are now dead. Just as the Lord said, they were all gone except for two, Joshua and Caleb. So they numbered these so they could receive their part of land according to the tribes. The fewest in number received less land than the tribes which were more in number. Sounds rather fair, doesn't it? It is. So the land was distributed according to the men that were numbered from 20 years of age and upward. That's about when men come into manhood. But where the land is located that they're going to receive for their inheritance, that's going to be determined by lot. In other words, that's going to be something the Lord decides. Now, there are a number of things we could share. We won't do that now. But the census, you remember the census of the Levites differed from the census of the other tribes because they were, first of all, they were counted, all that were numbered of them were from a month old and upward of the males, rather than from 20 years old and upward that were able for war. So there's the difference between the census, but here's the major difference too. The Levites weren't going to receive a land grant. They didn't have a land inheritance, okay? And so they were counted different, and that's the reason. In Numbers 18, verse 20, the Lord spake to Aaron, "Thou shalt have no inheritance in their land, neither shalt thou have any part among them." He says, "I am thy part and thine inheritance among the children of Israel." Again, in Deuteronomy 18, verse 2, "Therefore shall they," the Levites, "have no inheritance among their brethren. The Lord is their inheritance, as he said unto them." And probably got some things going on in your head. Well, then what do they get? Well, the Lord provides. And it's a good question to ask. Wherever the Levites come to live, they were to receive a tithe. And I think from that, where they come, they will receive part of the heave offerings and first fruits as they minister to the nation in the name of the Lord. Wherever they come, they will be supported by the people about them as they bring their offerings and first fruits. That's what they get. And they were to, those tribes were to bring the best. And so the Levites would receive of the best that the Israel had. And then the Levites in turn would take and pay a tithe of theirs to the Lord. It's interesting. Now, this chapter, chapter 27, concerns the question about the inheritance. And then Moses is to preview the promised land before he dies. He's not coming into the land of promise because he sinned against the Lord. And then finally, we read of Joshua's appointment as successor to Moses. Three simple things. So verse 1, then came the daughters of Zelophehad, the son of Heber, the son of Gilead, the son of Maker, the son of Manasseh. So you know clearly whose daughters they are. Of the families of Manasseh, the son of Joseph. These are the names of his daughters: Mahla, Noah, and Hogla, and Milcah, and Tirzah. We have those names of these daughters. And they stood before Moses and before Eleazar the priest and before the princes and all the congregation by the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. Now, that these five daughters of Zelophehad stood before the same men that were charged with taking the census was a good thing. They brought their question to the people that could answer it. The people involved with numbering the tribes, getting it all tallied up, were Moses and Aaron was dead. So his oldest son remaining was Eleazar. So Moses and Eleazar, they got the princes together of Israel, according to chapter 1 of Numbers, and they did a count. Those guys, it would be right to assume, they could answer their question. It doesn't do any good to take the question to somebody else. Now, I thought it was interesting that these daughters, I thought they did a good thing. They didn't complain. They didn't go murmuring to somebody else that really couldn't do a thing for them. But they took their issue to the ones that could give the answer. And that was a good thing. I think it was a very good thing. It only makes sense to do that. We're kind of like that sometimes. We might have a question or a concern, and rather than bringing it to the person or persons that can actually answer the question or settle the matter, we want to go off and start complaining to everybody else around. You know, it's just not good. The right thing to do if we have a real question, a real concern, is go to the people that can give you an answer or help with the matter. And that's what they did. I thought it was really good. Now, verse 3, so they said to them, our father died in the wilderness, and he was not in the company of them that gathered themselves together against the Lord in the company of Korah. So you know what they're talking about. But died in his own sin and had no sons. The implication is here. Our father died in the wilderness along with all of our fathers. Okay? All of the father's brethren, for no reason outside of that which all of our fathers died. They weren't involved in some rebellion. They all died because of sin, but not because of a particular sin, an offense against the Lord's people or the Lord. They didn't die as that kind of a result. And so, why should the name, their question, of our father be done away from among his family because he has no son? It doesn't seem fair. Give unto us, therefore, a possession among the brethren of our father. Give us a possession with what would have been our brothers. And Moses said, Moses did what he should do, brought their cause before the Lord. Now, in your mind, keep in mind, he would take this matter As I would think, the order would be, he would take it to Eleazar, the high priest, Aaron's son, who had taken his place after Aaron had died. He would take that, and then Eleazar, who would have on the priestly garments, would go into the tabernacle with his priestly garments on, which has on the front that breastplate of judgment. And in that breastplate, which is a pouch or a bag, beautiful thing held with gold chains that come down from the shoulders that were fastened to onyx stones on the shoulders. He's bearing up the names of the children of Israel before the Lord. But there inside were 12 stones, precious stones. And a name of the tribe was inscribed on each one. They were lined 3, 6, 9, and 12. And each one had the name of a tribe there. And he bore them upon him. It was fastened hard to his ephod, the other garment. It was fastened to that firmly, squarely. And so there's something else, though, inside that pouch. And it's called the Urim and Thummim. Now, nobody knows what that is. We don't know if it's a precious stones, I think, too. Wood or what? Metal? I don't know. But there's reference to it, and it's in the pouch. And we're going to come to this toward the end of the chapter. Urim and Thummim. And there there would be, he'd bear the judgment of the people of Israel upon his heart. And I think there's something special about that as we move into this a little more. Urim and Thummim means lights and perfection. And I did one of the things particularly is that he goes in there and the Lord reveals to him the answer that he needs to have. He is given the mind of the Lord. I don't know if it was auditory or if he got a sense of something, but the Lord communicated. What we do know is the Lord communicated to him what the answer was. And Eleazar would come back out and then communicate that to Moses, and that's what you have here. The Lord spake. Moses brought their cause before the Lord, so the things we just said took place, and the Lord then gave an answer. Spake unto Moses, saying, the daughters of Zelophehad speak right. Thou shalt surely give them a possession of an inheritance among their father's brethren. In other words, they should receive a portion with the sons of their fathers, though they are daughters. At that, I just want a small rabbit trail. We men need to be ready to hear the wisdom of the ladies, our sisters in the Lord. That's a good thing. Absolutely agree that women are to be silent in the congregation. No question about that. We all understand that. They ought not be leading the congregation, teaching the congregation, leading them in any way in a mixed assembly. Shouldn't be. It should not be. We can pray and praise the Lord together with our voices. But when it comes to oratory of sorts, women to be quiet. But that doesn't mean that they're stupid. It doesn't mean that they don't know some very, very good things. And I'm telling you, there's some good things. You know it. They've said things. It's like, wow, I needed to hear that. This is a good thing that they did. And we need to be, as men, we need to remember them. They have wisdom. I want you to turn to 1 Samuel just for an example of something great. There are several in the scriptures, but this one came to mind and I thought to share it. 1 Samuel chapter 25. It's a terrible thing that takes place here, but the wisdom of this woman is amazing. 1 Samuel 25, and I want to break into it just enough at verse 14. Abigail was married to a scoundrel of a man, Nabal, a wealthy man. Nabal. By the way, Nabal means a fool. And he lives up to his name. He's a vain man. He's a wicked man. But he has a very wise wife. A very, an humble woman. I think a beautiful woman. And you, I get the sense here. But verse 14, but one of the young men, one of the servants, came and told Abigail something. Something happened, and she needed to know what her husband had done. One of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness. David was fleeing from Saul, who was trying to kill him. He sent messengers out of the wilderness to salute our master, Nabal. And he railed on them. He let them have it. But the men were very good unto us, and we were not hurt. These were men who had been out there keeping the flocks of Nabal. And David's men had been kind of a wall about them. They didn't take anything from them, but they protected them by being there. And then David came into need, and the men, and they needed some food and stuff. And so they asked Nabal if they could have some. He said, no. Who are you? You know, there's a problem. Anyway, so this report was, but the men were very good unto us, and we were not hurt. Neither missed we anything, as we were conversant with them, all the time that we knew them, when we were in the fields. They were a wall unto us, both by night and day, all the while we were with them, keeping the sheep. Now therefore know, and consider what thou wilt do. Abigail, you got to do something quick. For evil is determined against our master, and against all his household, for he is such a son of Belial, that a man cannot speak to him. Then Abigail made haste, and took 200 loaves, and 2 bottles of wine, and 5 sheep ready dressed, and 5 measures of parched corn, and 100 clusters of raisins, and 200 cakes of figs, and laid them on the asses, and said unto her servants, go on before me. Behold, I come after you. But she told not her husband Nabal. And it was so, and as she rode on the ass, as she came down by the covert of the hill, and behold, David and his men came down against her, and she met them. Now David had said, surely in vain have I kept all this that this fellow hath in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that pertained unto him, and he has requited me evil for good. So and more, also do God unto the enemies of David, if I leave all that pertain to him by the morning light, any that pisses against the wall. He's going to kill all the males. And when Abigail saw David, she hasted and lighted off the ass and fell down before David on her face and bowed herself to the ground and at his feet and fell at his feet and said, upon me, my Lord, upon me let this iniquity be. And let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak in thine audience, and hear the words of thine handmaid. Let not my Lord, I pray thee, regard this man of Belial, even Nabal. For as his name is, so is he. Nabal is the name, and folly is with him. But I, thine handmaid, saw not the young men of my Lord, whom thou didst send. Now therefore, my Lord, as the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, seeing the Lord has withholden thee from coming to shed blood, and from avenging thyself with thine own hand, now let thine enemies, and they to seek evil to my Lord, be as Nabal. And now this blessing which thine handmaid has brought unto my Lord, let it ever even be given unto the young men that follow my Lord. I pray thee, forgive the trespass of thine handmaid, for the Lord will certainly make my Lord, referring to David, a sure house. She understood who he was. And because my Lord fights the battles of the Lord, and evil has not been found in thee all thy days. Evidently she had heard a report about this young man David. Yet a man has risen to pursue thee and to seek thy soul. But the soul of thy Lord shall be bound in a bundle of life with the Lord thy God. And the souls of thine enemies, them shall he sling out as out of the middle of a sling. And it shall come to pass when the Lord shall have done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning thee, and shall have appointed thee ruler over Israel, that this, what happened here, shall be no grief unto thee, nor offense of heart unto my Lord, either that thou hast shed blood causeless, or that my Lord has avenged it himself. But when the Lord shall have dealt well with my Lord, then remember thine handmaid. The wisdom, she deferred David and the men from coming in and shedding blood. She did that. She took it upon herself. She did that. She spoke these kinds of things. Nabal's going to have what I would say the Lord caused him to have a stroke, and he died, I think, about the next day for his wickedness. The Lord took care of that. But I was just amazed at her wisdom to act and do things. And it was a woman that did this. It was not necessary for a man to do that this time. I just thought that was interesting. And these daughters of Zelophehad spoke right, the Lord said. And so they were, the Lord said, and thou shalt cause the inheritance, in verse 7, of the father to pass unto them. They received what they wanted. And so, verse 8, thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. So as a result, there's something that needs to be said here. And there's more that also we need to know. Thou shalt speak to the children of Israel, saying, if a man die and have no son, then ye shall cause his inheritance to pass unto his daughter. Okay? And that's what came as a result of what they did. So let's just take this a little further. If he have no daughter, then ye shall give his inheritance, we're talking about land, unto his brethren, his brothers. And if you have no brethren, then ye shall give his inheritance to his father's brethren, his uncles. And if his father had no brethren, then you just take it a little further. Then ye shall give his inheritance unto his kinsmen. Another step away to that is next to him of his family. And there's a reason for all this. Shall possess it. And it shall be unto the, this is the rule, unto the children of Israel, a statute of judgment as the Lord commanded Moses. And the point is that the land is to be preserved as a family and tribal possession. It was never to become the permanent possession of any other tribe. This land doesn't transfer to of Dan to Ephraim or Gad to Benjamin or anything like that. The tribes always have this property. So that raises another question. What about the women, these daughters now that receive the land? Something's got to happen here, because if they marry outside of the tribe, then it's understood that the land is going to go with them. So that's actually brought up in turn to Numbers chapter 36, verse 6. Now, I want you to understand, the land could be lost because of indebtedness and probably other things, but indebtedness seemed to be the main issue. But there was a provision in the law which restored all land to its proper owners once every 50 years. 50 years. And that is called the year of Jubilee. In Leviticus 25:13, in the year of this Jubilee, it's a liberty, ye shall return every man unto his possession. They get their land back. And they had a scale of, we studied these things already earlier in Leviticus, and there was a way to figure out debt, the way to pay debt back, but it was on this 50-year scale. It was always on that 50-year scale. If you wanted to buy your land back and you sold it for so much, then if you wanted to buy it back early, then you had it prorated. That portion of the 50 years that was left, it was prorated. You had to pay that man for it. That was all that was in there. So now the issue of the daughters receiving their father's portion creates the potential for the land moving from one tribe to another. So we got to do something about that. The Lord is this. Numbers 36, verse 6. This is the thing which the Lord doth command concerning the daughters of the Zelophehad, saying, let them marry to whom they think best. That's good, right? Only to the family of the tribe of their father shall they marry. That keeps that land that they've inherited to the tribe. So, shall not the inheritance of the children of Israel remove from tribe to tribe? For every one of the children of Israel shall keep himself to the inheritance of the tribe of his fathers. Every daughter that possesses an inheritance in any tribe of the children of Israel shall be wife unto one of the family of the tribe of her father, that the children of Israel may enjoy every man the inheritance of his fathers. Neither shall the inheritance remove from one tribe to another tribe, but every one of the tribes of the children of Israel shall keep himself to his own inheritance. And there you have it. All right. So what? I don't know. But let's just say that somebody in a girl in Gad wanted to marry a man in Dan. I don't know. I don't know about that yet, except I would just to give you an instance, I would think that she forfeited the property. It has to go to the family. I would think that would happen. But you see the idea. And he meets this. I thought it was interesting. So verse 12 now, we come to Moses viewing the land before he dies. He's commanded now to go to a certain place. The Lord said to Moses, get thee up into this Mount Abiram. Abiram is a mountain ridge, if you will. And see the land which I have given unto the children of Israel. And when thou hast seen it, thou also shalt be gathered unto thy people, as Aaron thy brother was gathered. Why? For ye rebelled against my commandment in the desert of Zin, in the strife of the congregation. He knows what they're talking about. And some of you remember, to sanctify me at the water before their eyes. That is the water of Meribah, notice, in Kadesh, in the wilderness of Zin. Now, as I just said, Abiram is more a mountain range that looks over the Jordan River Valley. You'll have a reference to Nebo. You're going to have a reference to Pisgah. These are places, just different areas along there, reference points. And so Moses is going to this place. And I believe he will go to the top of Pisgah at Abiram and there die and see the land. And then the Lord will bury him in a secret place. I don't know if you remember this, but there are two Meribahs. Both of them have to do with the rock. Meribah is the strife. In Exodus chapter 17, verses 6 through 8, there are the first Meribah was where the children of Israel strove at Rephidim in the wilderness of Sinai. They strove against Moses and Aaron. Why? They're about ready to stone me, he says. And so the Lord commanded him to smite the rock. You might remember that. And water flowed out. And then there's a second Meribah, which, as you just saw, is at Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin. And there, he was commanded to speak to the rock. And then, in unbelief, he smote the rock twice. In Psalm 106, verse 32, they angered him also at the waters of strife, and that's Meribah, so that it went ill with Moses for their sakes, because they provoked his spirit, so that he spake unadvisedly, was, must we fetch you water out of the rock? So, and now, with those things, Moses is going to be heading in that direction. Now, he is to select a successor. Verse 15. Moses spake to the Lord, saying, let the Lord the God of the spirits of all flesh, set a man over the congregation, which may go out before them, and which may go in before them, and which may lead them out, and which may bring them in, that the congregation of the Lord be not a sheep with have no shepherd. It looks, Moses looks now to the wisdom of God to set a man over the nation. He acknowledges this, that the Lord is God over. He's the Lord over the spirits of men. Very interesting. In other words, the Lord knows what men are made of. He knows if a man is able to do the task or not. He knows that. He knows whether he's capable for such a task. That's the implication. It seems like that's why he brings this up. The God of the spirits of all flesh set a man over the congregation. Why? Well, you notice in verse 18, the Lord said to Moses, it's like the way of a pause. Take thee Joshua, the son of Nun. And notice what he says about him, a man in whom is the Spirit. And lay thine hand upon him. Not a spirit. Of course he has a spirit. We all have it. If we know the Lord, we are living spirits. If we don't know it, we're dead spirits. But we still have a spirit. That's how I understand it. He says, a man in whom is the Spirit. And it's not capitalized. I think this is important. You can look at a number of, I looked at every version I had, and they're almost split down the middle about whether it should be capitalized or not. And I think the point is that he's looking for a capable man, and the Lord says, he's the one. He has that kind of a spirit, a principle to govern the people. See the idea? He can shepherd. He has that ability to do that. Joshua has been a minister to Moses all the way back to Mount Sinai, at the least. In Exodus 24, verse 13, he's called Moses minister. And the first time he's mentioned in the scriptures in Exodus 17, verse 9, Moses commanded Joshua, who, I don't know, 20, 30 year old, to go and select men to go out to fight the battle against Amalek. And it was very interesting. And here he is all these years later. He by the way, he's with Caleb. He's, apart from Moses, are the two oldest men in the congregation now. Caleb and Joshua, they're the oldest. All the others have died. So the scripture says here and commands Moses to lay his hand upon him. And by placing his hand upon Joshua, he showed to all Israel who should be, in a public way, his successor. In verse 19, and set him before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation and give him a charge in their sight. Cause Joshua to know that all the people know that he's the one that the Lord has chosen to succeed me, Moses. The idea. And then it says, and thou shalt put some of thine honor upon him. And honor was not a word that I had expected at all. It's a very different word. But it's a good word here. Obviously, it was translated in other places as comeliness, beauty, goodliness. He's not plain or common, ordinary. He's a fit man for this office. You're going to show them that he is that kind of a person by somehow, I don't know if it's deferring the way that Moses will defer around maybe for a little bit and show the people that he has regard for Joshua as the one that's suitable to take his place. Thou shalt put some of thine honor on him, that all the congregation of the children of Israel may be obedient, that they will be able to listen and hear. They've got to be able to do this. And so that will help them to do this, to be obedient, to give consent. And so verse 21, and he, Joshua, shall stand before Eleazar, the priest, high priest, who shall ask counsel for him, Joshua, after the judgment of Urim, which means lights. And it's the idea of discernment before the Lord. At His, the Lord's, word shall they go out, and at His, the Lord's, word they shall come in, both he, Joshua, and all the children of Israel with him, even all the congregation. So the major or important point here is, especially they're getting ready to go to battle, and they need to have the direction of the Lord concerning warfare. And the Lord would give them that instruction. You know that's going to take place, especially here in a little bit, as they go over to Jericho and things happen and as they move into the land. And Moses did as the Lord commanded, and he took Joshua and set him before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation, and he laid his hands, plural, upon him. Some think that he was very enthusiastic. He says earlier about verse 18, lay your hand on him. And here he lays his hands. And they think that he is so forward about this, willing to do this, that it says his hands laid upon him and gave him a charge as the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses. So in the chapter, there was settled the matter of a father's inheritance. Should he have no sons? That's understood. And what to do with the property? It doesn't change from tribe to tribe. Moses is commanded to come into the mountain range of Abiram to get an overview of the promised land just before he dies. That's coming. And Joshua is appointed to be his successor. That's the chapter. Thank you so much for your attention.